Welcome back to Beyond the Headline, everyone. I couldn't be more excited that you're with us on the show today because I'm here with the co-founder and CEO of EasyTap, Bobby Bose. Bobby, thank you for being here.
Hi, Jenna. It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
I can't wait to dive into EasyTap and all the amazing work your team is doing. But before we do that, can you give us a brief understanding of the fintech market in India and what's happening there?
Yeah, it's an interesting journey that India's gone on. So for almost 11 plus years, we've been waiting for this transformation to happen in India. And, starting with Tom Friedman's book, probably a long time ago for many people, there was a huge mobile surge that happened. Of course, the macro trends of India were really, really big. And China was an initial bellwether. Well, it took a long time for it to happen. But what we're seeing here now in India is what everybody expected. And I think there's two major trends that are happening, which are really exciting. So for those of us who are in financial services or in mobile internet in this country, it's a great time to be here. The first trend is digitization. So unlike developed economies where all of us grew up with banking, sophisticated banking and, you know, electronic transactions and cards is just a way of life, that's not the way it works here. But recently, there's been a huge push towards digitization of instruments, bank accounts, everything. Your identification is online now, credit cards, debit cards, wallets, all kinds of great things are happening. So you've got this trend of digitization of the economy from paper and cash over. And so that's one macro trend that's being pushed. And at the same time, you've got another macro trend where we're seeing this leapfrog of mobile internet driving smart applications. And that really wasn't possible for any number of reasons in the past, infrastructure-wise in particular, but also consumers really weren't ready. But now you're in a place with smartphones and infrastructure and funding and great small companies creating great applications where the entire commerce environment can move into applications, move over the mobile internet and be smart. So the combination of these two makes financial services in India a great place to be right now. It's one of these rare times where you've got consumer demand pent up, government policy pushing this stuff, private sector creating great platforms and great companies to support all of this stuff, and infrastructure-wise, mobile platforms and things like that are in place. So that is the macro event of what's happening. What it means in reality is that a billion people will come onto the grid, and I'm not overstating that number. Any electronic banking or transactions in this country were probably limited to a small fraction of the population in a couple cities. Hundreds of millions of people, the further away you get from cities, were completely disenfranchised, had no way of having any type of electronic footprint or profile, and we're changing that now. So when you put a mobile phone in a village or in the pocket of a small business or in the arm a big company, you can really transform this country now, and that's what's going on.
And I think that's such a great introduction to EasyTap, which I can't wait for you to share with us. But one thing that really stood out to me was how much you guys impact the people you're equipping EasyTap with. It's life-changing.
Yeah. You know, payments is financial services generally. So we talk payments, but you can actually extend everything that we do to bringing people onto the financial transaction grid. So what we do, while you may see us different use cases, we allow a business to transact with a consumer and complete a financial transaction. That could be opening a bank account, transferring money, or buying something from your favorite shop. That's really powerful. You are kind of scaling something that's what I would call infrastructure. And what we've seen in emerging markets are two major waves of infrastructure change. The first one happened 15 years ago when we expanded communication. And that's really just how do we move from limited landline telephones to where every Indian has a phone in their pocket, which means they're connected to the world. So that was communication was an infrastructure play, and financial services is an infrastructure play. Now we're actually changing and bringing kind of money onto the grid, as I said, and changing and impacting people's lives. So when you have connected communication and people can communicate with the rest of the world and you allow them to kind of transact with the greater economy in a more sophisticated and streamlined way, those are two things that will actually lift a country in terms of GDP points. And that's really, really powerful. And that's kind of what makes a lot of us wake up every day beyond just building the company.
On that note, can you give us an example of what it's like to use EasyTap?
Sure. So there's multiple use cases, and there's a couple that will kind of grok with people in the U.S., and there's some things that are very, very India-specific. What we do, if you think about a transaction just to kind of make payments 50% easier for people to understand, most transactions happen between a consumer and a business of some sort. So you've got two halves of what we would call fintech. You've got an entire group of people trying to support consumers to digitize them, as I said, and give them all kinds of ways of using and transacting. So there's a lot of innovation happening in emerging markets there. How do you get in front of you, Jenna, and say, look, here's a credit card? So banks are doing that. There are mobile wallet companies that started a couple years ago. India not only has 600 million cards, we got from 0 to 100 million mobile wallets in less than a year. So this is the pace and scale that's happening. So one entire aspect of financial tech is happening on the consumer side. There's a completely different angle that's happening on the business side. So you could have every Indian with a digital phone and being able to transact seamlessly, but if you can't walk into a store or a government office or a bank and do something with it, it's completely useless. And that's what we do. So we have a completely different problem to solve. Our job is not to say, hey, we want to get you, Jenna, to have one or two instruments. Our job is to go to a store and say, you're going to walk in with a wallet, and I'm going to walk in with a card, and you're going to want to withdraw money, and I'm going to want to buy something. So the merchant problem is about supporting everything. What is out there today, and what's there going to be in the future? And allowing a business to do any type of transaction, any type of instrument for any type of person anywhere. And that's the problem we solve. And it's a big, hairy statement. But you can do it. And so let me answer your question more specifically. What we do is we allow merchants who have smartphones with an application running on it to complete a transaction. And what we do is we do two things. Number one, we allow applications to connect in a very seamless way, and we make payments easy for people who want to deploy a mobile technology play. So the most simple example would be what people in the U.S. have seen with companies like Square and PayPal, where you walk in, they have an app, they have a little device on the phone, you can swipe a credit card. So that's one use case. But another use case would be how do you actually put a bank in a village? Same thing, you give a phone to a village shop, and there's usually these villagers have literally one shop where they do everything. And that person with a phone now actually becomes a virtual bank branch. And all you have to do is the company like EasyTap that's powering the application, instead of processing a credit card transaction, we send it to the bank and we do a withdrawal. Or we can load money into a bank account. Or we can make that small shop in a village into kind of a one-stop shop for bill payments and voting and everything. So if you actually expand your mind and say, how do you take an application which can be anything? At the end of the day, somebody's got to connect to all of the plumbing in the back end and allow that transaction to happen. That's what we do. And so we power applications. We allow you to complete any type of transaction you want. So we've plumbed into everything. And we allow you to accept any type of digital payment that the person walks into your shop or store with to complete that transaction.
I'm really glad you shared that second aspect because it demonstrates the scope of the problem you guys are challenging. And oftentimes people describe you as, you know, the Square of India or the Apple Pay of India, and you really go beyond that.
Yeah. The problems, so we approached, when you have at different life cycles in a country or in an economy, I think there's different needs. And this goes back to what we talked about earlier about this being infrastructure. And where India is and where emerging markets are is you don't have the sophisticated systems where you're trying to serve an underserved sector of the market. What you're trying to do is build the rails of an entire new way of doing business. And so the approach we took, as amazing as a business that Square is, we're actually, if you wanted an analogy, we're kind of this weird combination of Android and Stripe. So we Stripe because we enable payments in a very easy way for companies and businesses that want to deploy a layer on top of it. And then we're Android because the point here is to create an operating system which interconnects everything, and we're at the very beginning. So that's our goal, is to be the operating system in a world where businesses need to get smart. They want to do many things, but payments is really complicated. You've got very old, archaic infrastructure, and you've got brand new, cool stuff happening. But what they really want is to plug into one partner and just everything magically happens. And then you can do a lot of other smart things in this day and age, which creates very Uber-like experiences. So we have an opportunity in India if things align, to create experiences that would be, you know, almost science fiction in the U.S., but it'll happen in India first, because we're going to leapfrog there very, very quickly.
I'm so happy you mentioned that. There's so many areas that I want to dive into, because I think this is so exciting. But the first one is just for you guys as a team at EasyTap, this opportunity, as you were saying, is massive. There's so many things that you can do. What are the main areas you're focused on right now that you believe are most important?
So, you know, EasyTap is 5 years in the making. We launched, we started the company in 2011. And of course, there was another 6+ years of bruises and bumps as all of us did our first startups and really learned what it is to launch a business in India. And actually we took a lot of that into this company. This was the Wild West, even in payments, mm-hmm. in 2011. And it took us 2 years for even people like Visa and MasterCard and the Reserve Bank of India to even understand what to do with companies like us, right? So there was a way that banking worked, and there was a way that point of sales worked, and we don't understand what you guys are doing. And so it took us 2 years to say, no, this is not only safe, but you guys need this, because this is how we're going to scale. So from 2013 to 2016, the first, like almost any business, the first year was getting the first set of customers on board and so on and so forth. But now, in the last 24 months, you're seeing just this hockey stick truly happen. And it's happening on both sides. And as I said, we're on the merchant side, and there's very interesting companies on the consumer side. So what's happening is this kind of confluence of things is just kicking in now. And again, to go back to the macro trends of India, the EasyTap story and the India story are very interlinked. For people who are familiar, even kind of tangentially with India, you'll know that the e-commerce story here is very, very big. There's not only Amazon, but there's some local players that have gotten a huge amount of funding and over the mobile internet. And what's interesting here is you've seen commerce change because of the mobile internet, and that happened 3 to 4 years ago. And these were kids. This isn't old school families who used to dominate India. These are kids out of college that are turning commerce over on its head. Then you saw transportation, Uber and the local rival Ola. Again, people are very familiar with what's happening potentially there. So transportation changed. So for 11 years, nothing, and then boom, commerce changes, and it's a bunch of kids with funding over the mobile internet. And then transportation changes. And then fintech hit. And not only was it kind of organic private sector, it was public policy also saying, we're going to make this a top priority for the government. So all of that happened. And to get to your question, what our goal now is, I think everything's kind of clicking into place. We've got generally the right idea. We're seeing huge adoption right now. We want to expand as quickly as we can. So the advocacy that we do, the evangelization that we do, is we're going to every business, however we can reach them, and saying, you need to get off of paper. You need to move on to a smart application or a smart software strategy, first of all. And it'll transform your business. We don't have payments conversations. We have kind of that first generation of efficiency-based conversations. And we're also saying that at the same time, the consumers are going to start demanding this. So let us help you kind of come into the 21st century. So where our focus is right now is just evangelization, touching every business in the country. And the way the country is set up, you've got large enterprises that are situated in big cities. You've got small businesses across, you know, tier 2 and tier 3 cities. And then you've got this massive bottom of the pyramid problem that we have, which is going to be about banking. And you need different strategies and different partners of how to get there. So that's our focus now. I think if we can convince people that they need to move to something smart to transform their business and turn them on, that'll be the next wave of what happens here. And you'll see huge numbers that even dwarf whatever's happened in the last 24 months happen very quickly.
Can you share one of your favorite EasyTap customer stories?
One of, if not my favorite customer story, actually is one of our very, very first companies. And again, we in the early days were trying to solve this credit card problem, first of all, right? Nobody even had the concept of wallets and all this other stuff. But we got approached by Visa, actually, and said, hey, listen, we've got a very unique problem, and we can't do this with traditional infrastructure. We've got a company called MicroPension, and what these guys do is they're trying to put people in the field and solve this other very basic problem in India, which is, how can we get farmers and poor people to save? And when you go and you talk about rickshaw drivers or truck drivers in urban areas, or you go to villages and farmers, we're talking about disposable income for them is 50 or 100 rupees. Let me just, that's $2 to $3.
Wow.
Okay. And what happens now, because there's no sophisticated system of even putting this into a pension scheme, they weren't saving. So if they had 50 rupees, it would go under the mattress and ultimately get spent. And you have this entire class of people who are essentially getting older and having a little bit of money and living day to day. But even though they could put maybe 50 rupees or 100 rupees into a pension scheme, they didn't even have access to it. So this was a, you know, in terms of purpose of life, this was something that we wanted to help solve. And the problem they were having was like, look, a farmer may have $2 to invest in a pension scheme. And we've negotiated a pension scheme that will accept that $2. But we have this problem. They're sitting with cash in a village 100 miles from a bank. And I can send a guy out there, but if the guy goes and meets them on the 15th of the month, they're not going to give that $2 to you because they may need it. But at the end of the month, if they have that $2 to give you, they'll give it to you. Now, here's your problem. You can't scale a business that way. You can't keep sending people out to collect $2. But what you can do is give those farmers a card, and instead of swiping it to make a payment, why don't we take their 50 rupees or 100 rupees and load it onto a card, which they can use to buy goods at their local store or fuel, so they haven't lost their money. And if there's any balance left in that, we can essentially take that money and put it into the pension scheme at the end of the month. This is the basic problem of countries at scale like India. And I mean, if you think about them, this is India in a nutshell. Your transaction sizes are too small for any Western model to scale. It's a face-to-face transaction which people can't crack. And the impact here is really, really huge. And so what we did is we had a hardware device that could read a credit card, but because we made our own hardware devices, and the only reason we make our own hardware is to bring the cost of hardware down, we want to commoditize terminals because it's just a way of reading a card, and we want to move the intelligence back. So we said, that's not a problem. We can actually change the system on our hardware so we can actually read the card and load it. And then we can have an application that says, hey, we've just collected 100 rupees from Jenna and load it onto her card. And now this card is active with 100 rupees and use it. And at the end of the month, we'll take that money and put it into a pension scheme. And we integrated to the pension scheme and all of that stuff. So we took payments that was really dumb, and we kind of used the software components because we're ultimately software guys, and we turned it around and we created something that now allowed us to scale pension and savings in this country, which otherwise that company wouldn't be in business today.
I love that. Wow. That exactly is like you were saying, it's what makes you want to get up in the morning.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And again, this is where why I love being here. It's really tough. It's really painful. It takes a long time for things to get done, and you have to solve 101 problems, but we're in the first generation of moving from nothing to something, and those ROIs on those type of phases of any country's life cycle is pretty huge.
It's life changing.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears, Bobby, a tiny bit, but still focus on fintech in India and dive into your TechCrunch piece. For anyone who hasn't read this, I can't wait to link to it because I loved it and thought you did such a great job of really mapping out what happened, where you guys are now, where everyone is going. One of the things you shared is that if this fintech revolution goes as the experiment is planned, it can have massive global repercussions by the end of this decade, which is just mind-boggling. Can we dive in there?
Sure. There's a lot happening, and the really, really hard work was done both by the government and also by a set of really smart tech people from Bangalore in particular, people like Nandan Nilekani and his team, who are all people who've made their money, done great, amazing things, built companies like Infosys, and now wanted to give back, and sat down with the government and said, look, if we have no incumbency, what would be the perfect system for a company, for a country like us? So let's not sit down and build on what the way things have happened in the world. And also, to be quite honest, let's take an India-centric approach. Why should, as amazing, as important as banks are and MasterCard and Visa and American Express and all these companies are, that's a very mature Western market that's really driving kind of their focus. And we should think about what's best for India. Not that we're going to kind of say push them out. They're really important. But let's reimagine this kind of a blank sheet of paper. And over the last, this is another 5 years plus, more than that actually now. And Nandan went in and worked with the government. Nandan Nilekani was one of the co-founders of Infosys and recruited a crack team of people here in Bangalore. And they started a project with the best and brightest to create from scratch a set of technology systems that took the core elements of any financial or government transaction and broke them up into components. And what that means is, how do you open a bank account? First of all, you need identification, number one. Number two, you need to transfer money seamlessly and at low cost. Number three, there's a certain elements around documentation. I mean, the amount of paper that we, the amount of trees we kill in this country and triplicate to do a loan or open a bank account that nobody reads is insane. And not to mention the environmental and efficiency aspect of it, it really slows down the entire process. What if we could link to documents, have digital signatures, have a document locker, could authenticate who you are over a basic smartphone, and then transfer money and do a number of other things instantaneously with government systems, and do this at almost no cost or minimal cost, what you'd have are a set of Lego building blocks that could recreate the entire way that the world works with a different cost structure and a different technology. And that's what they did. And so in many ways, as I said in the article, the only benefit of being way behind is once in a generation, you actually have no incumbents here, infrastructure, and you can actually leapfrog. Whereas if you went to the US and said, hey, let's redo everything, you'd be like, that's insane. We've got the social security system. Everything's linked to it. This is the way banks work. We're processing trillions of dollars. There's no way we're going to all of a sudden hit reset and move over. But we can do that here in India, and that's what they did. So what's come out, imagine if identification was read basically for free, and any smartphone now could read the iris or thumbprint of any Indian citizen, and with 100% certainty, or at least with government's backing, say, this is indeed Jenna, okay? And that, by the way, what that statement alone is what banks have spent billions of dollars in-store, in-company IP to just build how do you do authentication. And the government here did it and is giving it away for free as a service to developers. Kids out of college can access the UID project of India. So we now have a much bigger scaled, highly technology savvy, forward-looking way of identification that blows away what's in the US. Social Security is literally obsolete given what's happening in India. And we brought a billion people onto the system in 5.5 years. It was the fastest to a billion in the history of any project. I think WhatsApp was the second fastest, Google was the next fastest, and so on. I think I might be missing one. So now, and I just talked about identification. And like I just said, that alone obsoletes almost every IT identification department project that's sitting behind every bank in the US. It's unnecessary anymore. And now you've got payment transfer. So I've identified who you are. And now what if you had an app and I had an app, but instead of going through this very expensive Western system, what if we actually said, look, you can transfer money from your bank account to my bank account, not for 1% or not for 1.2% or not for 2%, which is the norm, but why don't we do it for 65.65%? Okay, so now the cost of transaction is not free, but it's coming down significantly. That immediately changes the economics of the way the entire credit and debit system of the world works. Okay, so now there are some practical features here. What I just said requires applications and companies to adopt, and there's a whole host of things that are going to happen. But from a technology point of view, we're at a point where all of these components are removing IP, democratizing the system, potentially allowing a platform for rapid innovation. And it's a starting point where if India scales and if we do even 20 or 30% of what we potentially could do with these powerful systems, you could see and you should see models here that will, I like to use Uber as a verb, Uberize, to make every transaction to kind of an Uber-like experience. And this is something that could be transported back. So while there's certain sectors where you've got companies that have done amazing things, imagine if just you're opening a bank account and selling a house and never required to even do anything except have your phone. You'd never have to sign a piece of paper ever again just because you filed your income taxes once. And the impact here is not just a better way of life and a more efficient system, honestly, the other impact here is many public companies going out of business. And it's just the pace of how things might happen. So companies that embrace it and evolve with it and kind of think about how to leverage it will do really, really well. It's not a threat in that sense, but companies that I think are resisting it and don't see what's coming or don't kind of see how we might use this may be in trouble.
And you've discussed that you feel like this is the beginning of the tech renaissance in a new way, and you're seeing very often a lot of founders, young individuals coming to you with these great ideas. Can you share some of those and what you feel like when you're sitting down with them?
It's wonderful. We're not at where the Bay Area was when I left it in 2005. But we were all wandering the desert for many, many years. I mean, you could probably put every entrepreneur in Bangalore in a room, and I think we often did in 2007 and 2008. So it's pretty amazing to see just people by default saying, let me do a startup before I think about joining IBM or, you know, a number of old companies that your parents would be happy for you to join. I've seen that shift happen in my period of living in India, and that's pretty amazing. I don't think every company's idea is amazing. I think we're going through that phase one of just building an ecosystem of smart entrepreneurs and quite frankly, smart capital. But if you have 10,000 startups, you're going to get 500 really good ones, and those 500 good ones will spawn the next generation of entrepreneurs. So that first phase is happening right now, and that's really exciting. I mean, to also be clear, I think one out of 500 ideas that I see are really good and scalable and all of that, but we're seeing those 10,000 ideas happening. In the financial services space, it's really exciting because I think we've also said, hey, like, let's lay the rails now because there's so much happening so quickly with all of these different components. We want to be an enabler instead of maybe necessarily even being kind of that company that comes up with the right application. So we've taken the stance of how do we enable two kids out of college to build an amazing application that we had not thought of? And so that's kind of the positioning we've taken. And let's be neutral in terms of which way the world's going to go, but let's try and enable everything. So I've mentioned this in the past. I've seen when UPI launched, which was the acronym for this payments element that the government's released, I saw kids creating apps that look no different in capability or user experience from PayPal. And that statement alone is, I mean, and PayPal has a huge amount of stuff in the back. It's still an amazing company. But the fact that you could see people transferring money with kind of zero risk, all of this stuff taken care of, was pretty impressive. And these guys banged it out really quickly. So it's exciting. It's exciting to see everybody wanting to do a startup. It's exciting that people are leveraging the infrastructure and leveraging what the government's providing and doing amazing stuff.
And when you're sitting down with them, Bobby, you've mentioned many times before, you mentioned it today, time is crucial in India. You have to be prepared to play the long game. What advice do you have for these young founders?
It's going to take a while. I mean, I think, and I've said this many times, if you come here with a 2 to 3 year experience, which is, by the way, me 11 years ago, thinking this would be simple, or come back, this is everything's going to happen so quickly. I think you need one or two iterations to really understand what's happening in India and how India works. And I think the other layer is, so there's this kind of persistence and grit that you need, just because this country is really tough. The margins are really low. It's hyper-competitive. And you've got this environment that's kind of moving like an elephant. So when it gets moving, it's going to be moving at scale, but it kind of takes time to get things up and running. And the first 2 years of a company are not like anything that you can equate to in the first 2 years of a Bay Area company. It's a tougher grind, in my opinion. And the final point is you got to figure, the product is not enough. And I've said this in other articles. What we take for granted in the Bay, which is build a great minimal viable product that users love and all good stuff will happen, that doesn't cut it here. You actually have to solve distribution. You've got a strong revenue model really quickly up front. You've got a whole bunch of things to deal with. So you have to be ready for that. And it's going to be people who are really patient and aren't in a hurry and are willing to kind of dive deep and roll up their sleeves and get to know how that last mile sale happens. That said, if you put in the time and effort, I think there's a huge barrier to entry too. because this is really, really hard to do. I'm not afraid of any U.S. company in year one who tries to come in here. I've never been afraid of that. So what I am afraid of are really smart U.S. companies that are willing to be here for 7 years and put money behind it. So the e-commerce war that's happening in India is very interesting. I think Amazon in year one was not a threat to Flipkart, but Amazon in year, you know, 7 or 8 is absolutely a threat to Flipkart because they're as much an Indian company as Flipkart is. And these are the two of the three leading e-commerce companies here. So it takes time and effort, but if you get to that point and you really learn and build a business that's working on multiple different axes, it's tough to replicate, and then you start seeing things happen. So that would stay the course, solve lots of problems, don't get too disappointed, but also don't get too high either. It's for the long haul.
It's a great transition, actually, Bob. You just did like the perfect segue into my last two questions for you. The first one is, you know, you've shared EasyTap is 5 years old, but really it's 11 years old with everything you guys were doing beforehand. For you on a personal level, what's been your favorite part of the experience?
My favorite part of the experience, and it's the 11 years actually. So I would say two things. One, building the companies is wonderful in kind of a kinetic and deep way. Anything you build from scratch along with my co-founders, especially when you go through ups and downs and especially when you have a long time to let it percolate, it's really tough. And if you kind of even kind of come out the end of one tunnel, even though there's 100 more tunnels to go, it does feel good. And I remember one of the best emails one of my investors ever sent me that I still kind of pull up for the team was when he said that we were talking about a contract we won, and it was a contract that was won because of five decisions we made over the course of 5 years. So it was a contract that was won 5 years ago because we picked the right partner and invested time and all of these things. And he said, you know, just this is the thing about India. It's like building this fortress brick by brick, and you can't really see the fortress, and it takes a long time. And the problem with that is it takes so long, it gives you a lot of time to second guess. Whereas in the Bay and the U.S., you kind of get into hyper-growth mode very quickly. So you move really fast, and you either are in or out. And kind of knowing that you've got the stamina and you start to see this building starting to be built, that's really great. The other part, it's been great for me personally, and I'm sure a lot of the other people in the company who have spent time in the U.S. and spent time in India, it's changed me as a person. I think living abroad is amazing. I think being kind of deep in a different country is amazing, and seeing the problems that countries like here face that we take for granted in the U.S. And so on both sides, it's been, you know, I think for my family, for me, for all the co-founders, it's been a great journey on both of those fronts, professionally and personally.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that, and I can't wait to watch the next years for you guys. Last one for you. We're fast forwarding 5 years, and there's a massive cover story coming out about EasyTap. What do you want the headline to be, and what do you want the picture to be?
Well, I would leave the headlines to people better than me at it, but I think ultimately if it was something around EasyTap as one of the companies that has brought millions, has been at the forefront of the financial revolution, and more importantly, as I've said, directly responsible for hundreds of millions of businesses and people having a different kind of status of life and set of savings and participation in the economy, that would be the core underlying tenet of what I would like that headline to be. And I'd love it to be a picture of somebody in a village buying something with EasyTap, and then that would be it. That would be the be all and end of what we've been trying to accomplish. If we're as ubiquitous as Android is literally in the pocket of every villager, and we're enabling commerce in every nook and cranny of this country, that would make me very happy.
That would make a lot of people very happy. Whenever I think of EasyTap, I'm smiling, because it really is that you guys are building the infrastructure like you've shared, but the impact, long-standing, of how you're changing people's lives and future lives. So thank you for all of the work that your team is doing, and thank you so much for sharing it with us. What's the best way, Bobby, for everyone to stay up to date with you, and for anyone who's interested in following along with the company, where should they go?
Absolutely. So you can go to easytap.com, and we're on Facebook and we're on Twitter, and you can get the links to follow us on both of those from our website. And from our website, you'll see a lot of our case studies. So I'll direct you first to our website, where a lot of our case studies and things that we're very proud of are there. Some of the acknowledgments that we've been fortunate to have will be there as well. And you'll get to learn a little bit more about us. So www.easytap.com, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jenna. It was great to be on.